Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. We're I'm an attorney, and Kim is our geriatric care manager from the Herzog Law Firm. And we'd love for you to be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. It's a beautiful Saturday, and we'll be able to go out and enjoy some sun today, hopefully.
I know. And hopefully the temperatures won't be as bad, because I'm not a fan of hot weather.
That's funny, because
I am. I'm loving it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I enjoy the hot water. What about you, Ben?
I'm not a hot guy. I could use upper 60s to mid 70s or so. So I'm about I'm about there right now at 71. So,
yep, I am right there with you. Yep. I want to be able to sleep comfortably and not, you know, last night was leg in, leg out, leg in, leg out, leg out.
Amen.
So Kim and I were talking this week, and yesterday it was interesting because we're in the Saratoga office, but we're distanced and, you know, following all the rules and regulations, but it seemed like Kim's phone was just ringing off the wall.
Yeah, yesterday was a little crazy, but, and this is what I was saying to Terry, who works with us, is that it, you know, people start realizing, oh my gosh, it's Friday, and so people were returning calls from earlier in the week, you know, calls that I had made Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I think it was like the panic mode. And I think we all get a little distracted with, you know, a lot of people are starting to go back to work, but still with the quarantine, it's hard to keep track sometimes of the days and time and things like that. And I also feel like with opening up, right? New York State is starting to open up a little bit. Mm-hmm. That folks are starting to kind of want to move again on some of the plans they were making before the shutdown. And so, yeah, yesterday was definitely a busy day. It was one of the things that I was thinking about talking about this morning, because a lot of times when we say geriatric care manager, people don't really understand what that means. Debbie, I wanted to ask you, what's your definition of a geriatric care manager?
Oh, that's tricky. It's too early in the morning to be asking me that. That my definition would be what you do.
Very good. Very good. You know, and it's funny because, like, sometimes we'll joke about, particularly Dave likes to make the joke that, oh, you know, geriatric care manager, but she doesn't look that old. But the one way I describe kind of what I do and what a geriatric care manager is, I mean, really, we are a professional group of folks. We're actually called aging life care managers. They went through an identity change a few years ago, so that's kind of our new term. And we really are... Our practice is really based in a holistic, client-centered approach, mainly caring for older adults, but we can provide services to folks who are facing other types of ongoing health challenges. We work with families. We work with the individuals who may be experiencing issues. I mean, this week I actually talked to folks alone who are not necessarily currently having problems, but are wanting to put together a plan in the event that they may have an issue. One of Harry's clients, actually, she's a nurse. She's 77. She still is working, and she tested positive for COVID. Ooh. She cares for her husband who has dementia, and while she can leave him for a few hours at a time, if something were to happen to her, and that was the purpose of her phone call was that if something happened and she needed to be hospitalized, she doesn't have any family close by that would be able to step in and take care of him. So one of the things that she and I were working on was developing a plan if that happened. Because, of course, with this kind of illness and with so many other illnesses out there, we do have caregivers that are caring for their loved ones. And, you know, we're always putting a plan in place for the person that's sick, you know, that has the diagnosis. But we also need to think about the person that is well, that is the caregiver taking care of the person with the diagnosis. Because if that caregiver goes down, we not only have one person needing care, but we have two. So I think sometimes that gets lost a little bit.
We actually had that situation years ago. One of the attorneys at the firm, his mother was taking care of his father, right? His father wasn't well. And then his mother fell and broke her hip. So they both ended up in the nursing home. She was in rehab, but he had to go to a full-fledged nursing home because she wasn't there to take care of anymore. And luckily enough, they had done their planning, so everything was in place. She actually ended up recovering, but his dad ended up staying in the nursing home. She, you know, she got out of rehab. She got to go home. But after her breaking her hip, there was no way she could care for him at home, even though she had recovered. So he ended up staying in the nursing home. So the family was like scrambling, right, trying to figure out what to do because, you know, here's mom taking care of dad, and all of a sudden now mom can't even take care of herself. What are we going to do?
Right, right. And I think a lot of times we don't realize all of the steps that it takes to get care in place. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of folks, and particularly with this couple yesterday, or not yesterday, she and I have been talking for the last several days, is that with her testing positive, it will make it much more difficult to have him admitted into a facility, even for respite, because of the fear of him carrying the virus with him into a facility, right? So, you know, we did find a facility that was willing to take him for respite in the event that she was hospitalized, but all of the pieces that we've had to put in place, because he has to have a something that's called a PPD, which is the tuberculosis test. You have to have an assessment called a PRI screen, and that sometimes can take a few days to get. So if you have an emergency, a lot of times thinking and knowing about these things ahead of time, just so you can either put that action into place or the amount of stuff that you can get done. So the nursing home has physician's orders that have to be completed. So a lot of these things are time sensitive as well. So it doesn't mean that once you get it done, it's good forever. For nursing home admission, most of the time, these documents are only good for 30 days. So so we're going through the process. She's going through the process of getting that taken care of for him right now. So if she's good, but say, for example, you know, several weeks from now, she gets even sicker and doesn't recover, we would have to go through the process of getting all of this certification of documents done again. So it definitely takes a lot of coordination, and that's really one of the focuses of kind of a geriatric care manager is being, I always describe it to people as you have a wheel, and from that wheel you have many spokes coming out, and the care manager is kind of the hub. It's the center of that wheel, and you know, we branch out to many different resources and information types of things to help keep that wheel rolling, you know. You know, we work with families, and we do housing and financial types of planning and referring, health and disability. There's crisis intervention. I mean, that's a big part of what we do, because as much as we preach, and particularly every Saturday, it's one of the things that we talk about, you know, planning, plan ahead. So much better than crisis, but inevitably folks end up in crisis, right? So we're helping them try to figure out what that immediate plan can be and then kind of move into the longer term, more sustainable plan for folks. Obviously, there's the legal end of things, particularly now with all of the upcoming changes that are going to be happening. You know, you sent me an email the other day about some of the proposed suggestions. The bar that is making for, or the Elder Law Association's making for some of the new changes coming up.
They are. They're making, it was a memorandum in support. The Elder Law and Special Needs section of the New York State Bar Association, which we're members of, are trying to, I guess, not influence, but actually give our opinions on some of the changes to community Medicaid and some of the other services that are offered, and kind of clarifying, trying to get a clarification on exactly how things are going to be treated. It's easy for us right now to say, okay, you're going into a nursing home, there's a five-year look back, but until October, for community Medicaid, there's no look back. So the rules are changing in October, and what we're trying to do is clarify exactly how they're going to look back in October, right?
Right.
It's a very confusing time. And Kim and I would love to talk, but we'd love to hear your questions if you want to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And I wanted to tell you guys that we still are doing Webinar Wednesday, right? So next week, which is going to be Wednesday, June 10th at 10 a.m. in the morning, we have How to Plan Your Estate. And at 2 p.m. is Aging in Place. So the 2 p.m. Aging in Place is kind of what Kim's been talking about as far as what her job is for being a geriatric care manager. It's a very interesting area, and it's not just law. It's like, I know Kim loves to tell people, look, they're lawyers, I'm not. You know, not that that's a bad thing. But anyway. Yes, Ben?
Yes,
hey, Ben?
I
thought you said something.
I'm listening to everything you're saying. I had the mic turned off, so I'm not sure what you heard. I hang on your every word you guys say, so.
So I'm hearing voices now. so again, 10 in the morning on Wednesday, How to Plan Your Estate, and 2 in the afternoon, Aging in Place. And then the week of June 15th, we actually are doing a webinar week. All these nice little rhyming things, right? A webinar week that's going to, every day during that week, we're going to have a webinar. On Monday, June 15th, is going to be Wills versus Trusts at 2 o'clock. On the 16th, Aging in Place again, in case you couldn't get the earlier one. What to Do When a Loved One Dies, that's on Wednesday, June 17th. June 18th is Planning for Someone Who Has Special Needs, which is one that we haven't done before, and that is, it's very, very important. And then June 19th, which is that Friday, is Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths. The one at 2 p.m. on Thursday, June 18th, the Planning for When a Loved One Has Special Needs, is really important because I've had, I don't know how many people say, well, I've got two kids, but I want to leave everything to the one child because his brother has special needs and I don't want him to lose his benefits. And my other child has promised that they will take care of him. Well, you really don't have to do that. You can actually leave money to someone that has a disability, and you can put it into a special needs trust so they can have the money from the inheritance and they can still get their benefits. So definitely a great one to watch to get some information on that, because a lot of people aren't aware that you can kind of have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I actually was talking to another colleague of mine who is working with a case, and that's the one thing, too, I love about my field is there's a group of us in the Capital Region, and we talk regularly and kind of bounce cases and ideas off of each other to, you know, talk about the different options and things that are out there. And she called me because she's got a brother and sister who have been living together. The older sister is taking care of them, but she doesn't live with them. So the one sister is disabled. Her brother is physically okay, but probably has some type of intellectual disability. But he's high functioning and can do grocery shopping and things like that. But they're at that stage where the one sister who's in a wheelchair is 71, the brother is 68, so they're really wondering if living in a house together is an option, and there is a testamentary trust set up. So there were lots of moving pieces and parts to their story, and so we were just talking about maybe some of the different options that were available to them, because as we age, we all anticipate that we might need a little help, or we might need to get some care in or get some other services going. And so those are some of the things that we were talking about. But just that whole special needs component, you're right, Debbie, because a lot of times people don't really think about or realize that you, even though you may have a third-party trust or some type of other kind of financial award set up. I used to work with folks who were diagnosed with CP, and for folks that had actually received won a legal case, had a chunk of money, but we were able to get them set up on services, set up a, you know, third-party trust so that they could maintain that money for the different other things that are outside of basic daily care, you know.
That's great. It's good that you can work with them, and that's the whole thing. We try to cover everything, the old adage, from soup to nuts. I don't know where that came from. But anyway, we try to look at the family as a whole, as the people, the parties that are involved as a whole, and people, whenever I sit down with them and we're going over the questionnaire, well, why do you need to know that? We ask,
right.
Are there any children that have special needs? Are there any grandchildren that have special needs? Is there anybody that's on disability? And the reason we need to know that is we need to make sure that your plan works. And I had a client, actually, he's the child of one of my clients, and he came to me for estate planning, and he's like, well, I want to leave some money to my mother. And I'm like, that's fine, but we need to make sure that if mom, God forbid, is in a nursing home when you pass away, we don't want that money to go to her if she's in a nursing home, because that's going to kick her off services. And he's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. And it's like, well, these are the things that we look at to make sure that if something happens to you before something happens to mom, and mom is in a care facility, you don't want your money to go to pay for mom's care, right? You want it to go to one of the kids or one of the grandkids or something like that. So we try to do an overall view and try to get the plan and all of the documents working in place. And we also try to work with financial planners and with CPAs. I mean, the best thing you can do is have a great lawyer, a great CPA, a great financial planner, and have them all working together to make sure that your accounts are set up correctly, that your beneficiaries are set up correctly, and that you're getting all the tax advantages that you need so that everybody's on the same page.
Right. One of the most popular things, I mean, I'm in that age bracket where a lot of my friends have, you know, adolescent, teenagers, young adults in their household. And I love talking to them about estate planning, because who thinks that you need estate planning for your 14-year-old, or more so for, I had a lot of friends whose kids went to college for the first time this year, and you don't think of needing estate planning documents for your 18-year-old headed off to college. But as you know, you very often say everyone over the age of 18 at the very least needs to have a power of attorney and healthcare proxy. And, you know, a lot of friends will cock their head and look at me like, what are you talking about? And so I, you know, tell them the story that you had with your son, that, you know, he was hospitalized. And because you had that power of attorney, you were able to have conversations and talk to them. Because otherwise the medical field is not, you know, and it's not their fault. They're following the law, you know, the HIPAA Privacy Act, they're following that they really can't speak to anybody unless they have verbal permission from the person they're speaking of, or you have a document that says, I have the ability to do that. Super important.
Yeah, our healthcare proxies and our powers of attorney both have HIPAA language in them. So.
Right.
We got that covered, and yeah, it's a great thing, and you don't think about that, but, you know, your child, my child was several hours away. So when his appendix ruptured, you know, when we're on the road driving up there to try to get there, I'm trying to talk to the medical people, and they were wonderful. You know, they kept me up to date, but I mean, he was already out of surgery by the time I got there.
Right. So there are lots of things that you need to mitigate and possibly navigate. I mean, if he had had a serious health issue or, you know, underlying in addition to that crisis event, they would need to know those things because, you know, as we know, kids are not always great at communicating some of those things. And, you know, it's important. It's really important for everyone to have that type of planning and that type of document. So I love educating my peers on all of this. If anybody has a question, please call in 518-476-5900. Debbie and I get to talk every day.
We do. We generally get to talk every day. And it's interesting because we'll be, one of us will be on the phone and we'll be like, oh, hold on a second. So we'll put them on hold and walk across the office and ask each other, you know, a question like, okay. Then we go back to our phone call. So, you know, right. We work together as a team to make sure that we give you the best advice possible. And it's interesting. I've got people that are calling in now that before it wasn't really a choice, right? We were telling people we'll talk to you over the phone. And I've got people now that are like, nope, you know, I'm going to wait and I'm going to come in whenever you guys are going to open your doors for us to do an in-person meeting. And I think that's great. I think it's great that people, you know, want to get out of the house and they feel comfortable enough to come in and visit with us. And I think that probably by the middle of the month, we'll be doing in-person meetings. We've already set up the Saratoga office so that we have the spacing for everything, and we've got all of our cleaning stuff in order. And it's interesting, we're not going to take clients' temperatures, I don't think. I went to get an eye exam the other day, and she did my temperature and everything and had the whole questionnaire before they would do anything. But, you know, everyone's having to do that now to make sure that they keep everyone safe.
Yeah, it's definitely a new way of doing things. And but as we were talking, as we were waiting for the radio show to come on, it is interesting to see the split, you know, to be certainly traffic is much heavier now, right? The moment we entered phase two, it was like all of a sudden everybody jumped in their car and had to go somewhere. And I think that's the constant reminder is we still, you know, not to live in fear, but definitely to take care of yourself and take care of those who are around you, because it has not been fun. You know, my job as a social worker, I thrive. You know, I went into this career because I love working with people, and, you know, being bound to a desk and a phone is hard. And I can't make good, thorough, complete assessments unless I'm sitting with someone in their environment and can kind of, you know, I'm not just talking with the person, but as I'm in their environment, I'm seeing how things work. I'm seeing how they function in that environment. You know, I'm picking up on small cues as to, you know, are there safety issues? Are there, you know, things that aren't working optimally? Are there, you know, and I always ask for the 50-cent tour so I can see how they move throughout their home so that I can either make suggestions or, you know, a lot of times it's the kids that are hiring us to do things. And a lot of times I'm telling the kids, hey, it may not be your way, but they're doing okay, you know? And can we do some things to enhance it? Absolutely. But they've got things figured out for themselves and they're doing okay. And sometimes it's just putting the kids' minds to rest that that mom and dad are actually okay, you know? And they don't need a big intervention. Maybe they just need a little baby intervention. We need to do a little future planning for them. But it's not always slapping the handcuffs on and saying it's time for the nursing home sort of thing. So
No, definitely not.
And we get a lot of that. I mean, we get a lot of calls to say, you know, my doctor says, you know, I have to go to a nursing home, or I can't live in my home anymore. And really what I say to folks is, unless you're in imminent danger to yourself or someone else, we need to examine all areas. No one can remove you from your home unless, like I just said, you're in imminent danger to yourself or others. And there are always things that we can examine and ways that we can look at improving folks' circumstances and situations. We just have to put together the right plan to do that. I would say 9 times out of 10, we're able to figure something out, you know, which is really nice.
It is. It is. It's good whenever you can offer that kind of service. And like you said, walk around the house and figure out, you know, would it be easier if they had grab bars? Would it be easier if we opened this doorway up a little bit? It's not easy.
Right. Right. And that's helping to find the resources that can help with that. And that's a big part of what we do. I mean, we had not too long ago working with Jane Marie on a case where the gentleman called because he wanted guardianship for his sister-in-law. So it's his wife's sister, and they both have dementia, so God bless him. He's taking care of his wife at home, and then he's taking care of her sister, and she lives about 20-25 minutes from him, so the back and forth. But his sister-in-law definitely has, unfortunately, her dementia is a little more challenging. She has a few more behaviors, and she's not as easy to deal with. She's a little more opinionated and resistant, I would guess, to services. And so he was really inquiring as to whether or not, well, he wanted to get guardianship. And one of the things Jane Marie was explaining to him is that power of attorney and healthcare proxy, he really could make the decisions for her. He didn't, you know, need the guardianship in order to do that because they had done the proper planning. So sometimes it's educating people as to what they can do for the loved ones to make sure that they can keep them safe. And he's been trying to, you know, have home care in there and things like that, but she's just very, very resistant. So we're putting together a plan for him, but what if she's hospitalized, these are the steps we can take, you know, how we can add some additional home care services to keep her safe, those types of things.
All right, I'm going to talk now.
Okay.
It's coming up on the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next half hour to answer your calls on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. We would love for you to give us a call.
We would love that.
I think people are out enjoying the weather.
Doesn't Frank have to make another amendment to his trust or something? Seriously. Where's Stephen Redhook? I mean, where are these people this morning?
They're enjoying the nice weather before it gets too warm. So if you would like to give us a call, the phone number is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And Kim and I were talking about her services, and it's interesting. I have a client that Kim has been working with that she had moved into senior living, and then she's kind of been bouncing back and forth between senior living, and now she is in a nursing home. And Kim actually kind of stepped up and is helping, not physically helping, but she is arranging to help her get her stuff out of her senior living because her person, her power of attorney and healthcare proxy, doesn't live locally. So she's been on the phone with her directing what needs to be done. And, you know, we're a full-service law firm, which is not what a lot of them can say. But, you know, Kim is great in that she can help people reach out to the right people to get stuff done.
Yeah, there's a lot of coordination. There's a lot of moving parts and pieces sometimes. And even with when we're doing Medicaid and doing a Medicaid application, you know, it doesn't stop with just getting the Medicaid approval. You know, there are a lot of estate planning or elder law firms that will do a Medicaid application, but it kind of stops with, okay, we got you Medicaid, be on your merry way. It's really looking at what the proper plan is, you know, what the proper Medicaid program is. And actually, I've gotten this question like maybe three or four times this week is, me as a care manager, do people need to be working with the law firm from a legal perspective in order to have care management? And the answer is no. Actually, I think the care management practice is kind of a standalone option, if you will. So you don't need to be doing any kind of legal services or legal planning in order to work with me on a care management plan. I mean, one couple actually, she had her mom. Her mom had been approved for community Medicaid right before the pandemic hit. Of course, pandemic hit, the services weren't coming in. Everything kind of came to a halt. So they live in New Hampshire. They came and collected mom from her apartment in Waterford and moved her to New Hampshire with them temporarily, you know, thinking, okay, you know, this will be over in a few weeks and, you know, we'll get mom situated back at her apartment in Waterford, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, 2 weeks turns into 4 weeks, turns into 6 weeks, and they're suddenly realizing mom can't live in their house because it's not handicap friendly. It was a split level. Mom can't really navigate stairs very well, those kinds of things. So one of the folks that they had been involved with prior to moving referred them to me. I kind of chatted with them. And one of the things that I've been doing with them, which has been really fun, is we originally started setting up services for home care. We kind of started talking about the different programs that were available and had settled on one of the home care programs. But as I was listening and talking to them, you know, daughter and son-in-law live in New Hampshire. They're the closest folks. They're about 3.5 hours away. And mom is 88. So there's certainly different things going on there. And one of the things that I suggested, I said, well, maybe you might want to think about assisted living for your mom. And in most cases, when we generally talk to our folks, assisted living is not covered by Medicaid. However, there are a few, they're called assisted living programs in New York State. And we have a couple in our area in the Capital Region, a little beyond, that are actually quite nice. And so I kind of opened that door to them. Mom wasn't really crazy about having someone one-on-one with her all of the time. And the nice thing about assisted living is that you are in your own apartment. You get the support and care you need. So you have somebody reminding you to take your meds. You have somebody giving you the 3 meals a day. You have someone helping you with your personal care if you need it, you know, the showering, those types of things. But you also have your own space where you don't have someone hovering over you. One-on-one, 12, 16 hours a day. You know, they're coming in and out and helping you as you need it. And so it was one of the things that we started exploring. And next Tuesday, I believe. She will be moving into one of the programs out in Cambridge, New York, which it's a lovely old Victorian home that was converted into an assisted living many years ago. And she will have a great time because she will have her own private room. She will have lots of folks that she can still engage with. She'll have activities. So it's a nice, and the daughter and son-in-law have kind of the peace of mind that they don't have to worry about, you know, if somebody doesn't show up or if one of the caregivers calls out sick. I mean, what is the backup plan there? So it was one of the things that they didn't even know existed or didn't even know it was an option until they had, until I kind of opened that door for them. So there are lots of different ways that, from a care management perspective, that we can kind of handle things. Yesterday, very sweet client of yours, Debbie, that we've been working with trying to do. I mean, you know, I called the doctor's office yesterday. I called, you know, any Alzheimer's services, you know, just working to kind of coordinate a lot of the things for him, because as a caregiver, you get so overwhelmed with just the task of taking care of somebody, and I won't even say basic task of taking care of somebody, because it can be really, really hard. But, you know, he called on Thursday because he had gone out for coffee and came back and found her kind of slumped and unresponsive in her chair, and thought that maybe she had had a small stroke or, you know, something else was going on. So he called our office first, wanted to know what to do. And so, you know, we slowly helped him kind of navigate, call your primary care physician, because, of course, in this day and age, nobody just wants to show up to the hospital, right? Nobody, you know, your doctor's office tells you, don't come in, call. So, you know, I worked with him to get him through. And, I mean, ultimately, they did have her go to the hospital, as we suspected. The hospital said, oh, there's, you know, we checked her out. There's really nothing wrong. Because as the day went, she became more like herself. But there was obviously something that happened to cause that, whether it was a drop in her blood pressure. So we just started that process of investigating. And we've kind of, you know, one of the things that I've done is kind of step-by-step work with him and checked in with him to say, okay, so now we've eliminated this. What's the next step? We have a visiting nurse coming in next week. We were able to get Eddie Alzheimer's. They have a wonderful respite program for caregivers to get a break. And he had started the process several months ago and then decided that he really didn't think he needed it. So, you know, I encouraged him yesterday. I said, we're going to put this plan back into action. And the care navigator who had been working with him prior emailed me, you know, at 3 o'clock yesterday saying, you know, we're expediting it. We're going to put it right through. So that's kind of the advantage, too, is having somebody that can do that one-on-one advocacy. Because otherwise, if he had just called them himself, and not that they're bad or anything, but, you know, I was able to really say this is important and they're really struggling right now. So if we can kind of put an extra green light on this, it would be very helpful. And so they did, which was great, you know.
Yeah, he's a great client. He's been my client for a long time, and I was going to talk about this. Actually, we really miss our clients, and we miss the fact that we can't have everybody all in one big room for the client seminar. Usually each year we do the client seminar and we invite all of our clients in to find out the updates, you know, what's going on, what are the changes. And so this year, obviously, we can't have that many people in one room, no hundreds of people in one room. So what we're doing, and if you're our client, you'll get notification of this, we are going to do a client seminar this year. We're going to do it virtually. We're going to do it on Zoom. And we're going to send out invitations via snail mail and also to email to invite our clients. We'll give you the link, and it'll be very similar. Sounds kind of weird. It'll be very similar to our client seminars that we used to have live, except no brownies and cookies unless you make your own and bring it around the computer and eat them. We're going to do it the same way we usually do, with sending you what we're going to be speaking about. You'll be able to log on. Each attorney will do, you know, a presentation on what the changes are, what's new, what to look at, and Kim will also be there doing hers, and then we'll have time for questions at the end. It's a little bit more difficult than raising your hand, but as some of you know that have been doing our Zoom presentations, there is a chat bar, right, that you can actually kind of click on and ask a question. And also, we'll probably in the letter be saying, hey, if you're going to attend the Zoom presentation, and if you do have specific questions that need be addressed, we can, if it's something we can't talk about at the client seminar, we would be happy to give you a call. And like I said, I mean, we're open. We're still doing the parking lot signings of documents in Albany. We're still doing the signing of documents in Saratoga and the lobby, and we will be opening our doors. We are phase two. We will be opening our doors to clients to come in. It's just we want to keep everybody safe. So the client webinar is going to be in July. We haven't really picked a date yet, but we will be sending out invites so that you guys can join us. And we're looking forward to being able to touch base with our clients.
Yeah, I have to say, I think that's the thing that I miss the most. You know, I miss being out and about and being able to visit and things like that, and look forward to for that to return. And I mean, you know, my profession is considered essential, and I do have had some, you know, some of my colleagues that have been doing visits and things like that. But, you know, and we certainly could in an emergency situation, but really we're still kind of focused on keeping people safe and, you know, not unnecessarily exposing folks to things that would otherwise put them in jeopardy, you know. But it has been certainly been challenging. And I look forward to the day where we return to normal, you know, whatever that will be, because I don't think anything's going to look like it did before, you know.
No, I don't think so either, but I'm looking forward to seeing my clients again. I really do miss seeing everybody, and talked to a lot of them during the pandemic. We've had a lot of the clients that have called in just to touch base, and we've gone over their documents over the phone to make sure that everything was taken care of, and it's really nice to be able to talk to everybody.
For sure. You know, one of the ways that we've been keeping in touch has been our weekly webinar Wednesdays. Oh, I got three of them in there, you know. So every week we have been, I think we did our first ones, what, in April? And we've continued. And it's definitely been a learning curve, but it's been fun. And for those of you who haven't joined us yet, so every Wednesday in the month, we do them at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. This week on the 10th, we're doing how to plan your estate. And that's sort of a new one for us, right, Debbie? Like, that's mm-hmm. kind of a new one that you put together. And it kind of, what makes that one a little bit different than our typical estate planning seminars?
This one's a little bit different because it talks about, I mean, all of them talk about the different documents and everything. It actually goes into assets like businesses, right? Because there are a lot of our clients that have businesses, and it's kind of a step-by-step what you need to do to plan your estate, and also what you need to think about if you have a business, right? Talking about, do you have a buy-sell? Right? Is your partner's wife going to end up being your business partner? And what do you need to do to avoid that? And what's going to happen if you run a business and you end up passing away? Is there someone that's still going to be able to run payroll? Is there someone that's still going to be able to take care of things? So it kind of ends with a little bit more of a business plan than most of ours do. But again, it just talks about the basic things. What do you need to do, right? What do you need to get together in order to start planning your estate. And whenever we send out the questionnaire to people, they're like, wow, this is a lot of information. And we're like, yeah, we need that. It's kind of like when you go into a doctor's office and they give you that big questionnaire that you have to fill out. As we were talking earlier, it's difficult to diagnose what type of estate plan you have or that you need unless we know exactly what's going on. You know, do you have someone that's on disability? Do you have someone that's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, right? Because we definitely need to plan for that. I got a call yesterday from a couple and their daughter, and mom has been diagnosed, and they don't have documents. I think they have a will that's like 20 years old. And they said, the most important document you need to get in place right now is a power of attorney.
Mm.
And then we should start looking at community Medicaid if you need some care at home, because dad is the caregiver and dad's getting a little burned out, right? So, and he can see the illness progressing and he's going to need some help. So we talked about community Medicaid yesterday and what exactly, you know, assets that you get to keep, what kind of income do you get to keep? And at the end of the call, it was like, wow, we didn't realize all of this is available. And right. A lot of people don't. Community Medicaid right. is a wonderful thing.
It is. And I definitely, you know, we talk about all of the services that you can provide. And one of the things that, you know, is putting together the proper plan according to what the need is. You know, in the last several weeks, we've dealt with everyone who, folks who have, we've had a couple where the husband was on hospice. And that a lot of times what people will hear is, well, if you're on hospice, you can't get community Medicaid. And, I mean, technically that's true, but not really true, because what we do is we work out a plan so that, yes, you can keep your hospice benefit. You cannot enroll in a community Medicaid program if you're on hospice. So we go through the process, get them Medicaid approved, and prior to whatever Medicaid program that they choose, we'll disenroll them from hospice, enroll in the Medicaid program that they're choosing, and then re-enroll in hospice. For whatever reason, you cannot be on hospice and enroll in community Medicaid home care program, but you can be on community Medicaid home care program and enroll in hospice. I'm not sure what the difference is, but so, you know, explaining that to people, working with, you know, the hospice to help them understand. And now it's a thing, right? It wasn't a thing 6 or 8 months ago. Most of the time hospices would be like, no, we're not going to do that. But now they understand the process. We work with the managed long-term care company or with the nursing home transition diversion waiver program to make sure they understand when they're issuing what we call the notice of decision. That's, you know, sort of the yes, we've accepted you. Yes, we're going to start providing services under this program. So it's just a lot of coordination. And, you know, the advantage our firm has is having someone like me that can help do all of that and explain how the mechanics of things work. Because not every program is for every person. And we want to make sure that folks get the right, you know, that they get the right fit. And they're not just getting kind of pushed into some program that's really not going to provide them with the help that they need type of thing. Let's see, we're talking about seminars. So this Wednesday, we've got the How to Plan Your Estate, which I like that one because it talks a little more in depth to some of the things that you were just mentioning, Debbie. And then, of course, we're doing our Aging in Place. And the Aging in Place does go into greater detail, not only about Medicaid, but a lot of the other options that are out there, a lot of the community resources that I utilize to help folks kind of enhance some of the services. Also, because the Medicaid process does take a while, some of the things that we can utilize to help bridge the gap until we can put in a good plan under community Medicaid. The week of June 15th, we're doing them every day, aren't we?
We are, and, you know, that's kind of cool. So we have them every day at 2 o'clock. So
cool.
You can set your alarm for 2 o'clock
every day and jump on our Zoom. I mean, and if you go to our website, No, www.herzoglaw.com under seminars. We'll have them all listed out. But the week of June 15th at 2 p.m., we're doing Wills versus Trust on Monday, Aging in Place again on Tuesday. What to do when a loved one dies. That's one I actually like a lot. We don't do really often. It's not one of our regulars. We've been trying to kind of rotate it once a month. But that's another big question mark. A lot of people don't really understand the process. When a loved one passes away, who do you need to notify first? Who is in charge of what? Those kinds of things. So I like that one. And then we're doing another sort of new one on the Thursday special needs, how to plan for someone with special needs. You know, the Medicaid estate planning myths on that Friday. And then the following Wednesday, we go back to just our Wednesday webinar. A brand new one that we're doing is fraud awareness and scams in the time of COVID-19. That's one I'm putting together, and I think I mentioned to you the other day, I could not believe the number of scams that are out there and have come that are just horrendous and really have cost already in the U.S. over $20 million in losses of some of these scams that are out there. It's crazy. So we're going to run a webinar specifically on that to kind of help you guys understand what's out there and kind of what to avoid. And then we'll be doing estate planning in primetime. We're going to use a little help from some of our favorite TV families to explain some estate planning types of options, you know, or challenges maybe too.
Challenges. Well, you know, you and I were talking about it earlier. Whenever you put it more into a personal perspective, it's a lot easier to remember. Kind of like when you're taking a test, how you kind of like use, well, I used to mnemonics, right? So you put an initial of each word in the thing into a word. So that's how I study for the bar exam. But anyway, so whenever you put something personal into it, it's easier to remember. So whenever you're looking at the estate planning in prime time, I crack up because this is one that Dave had put together using different families. I know that he has, like, All in the Family with Archie Bunker. I mean, you know, hopefully the people that are listening are like, Archie who? But anyway, you know, and some more... Well, the Brady Bunch. I mean, who didn't watch the Brady Bunch? If you say you didn't watch the Brady Bunch, Kim, you know,
I lived for it. And I even made my now 16-year-old daughter watch the Brady Bunch when she was younger.
And what did she think? She's like, Mom.
No, she liked it actually. Little House on the Prairie. We did the classics, you know.
Little House on the Prairie, that's a good one. I enjoyed that one, too. The Brady Bunch, though, is just like a perfect example of estate planning in prime time, because when you have mixed families, and we always talk about that, because a lot of times, you know, my mom will call me because, you know, her people her age, she still goes out to lunch, well, not right now, but before all this hit, once a month, she and the people that she graduated from high school, there's a bunch of the ladies, would go to lunch every month. One time they would, you know, move around to different restaurants, and she would say, can you believe this happened? Can you believe that happened? And I'm like, uh-huh. Wow. Can you believe that, you know, they got remarried, and then whenever that person passed away, that, you know, my friend didn't get anything, it went to the new spouse's kids. I'm like, uh-huh. And she's like, how is that fair? I'm like, well, you know, they didn't plan correctly. So that's one of those things where we try to help people kind of navigate those things, because if it's second marriages or even one of your kids is going through a divorce, I have several clients that come in and say, my child, their marriage is kind of on shaky ground and I don't want to leave them all this money and then have it go to their ex-spouse-to-be. And I'm like, oh, we can work on that. We got a solution for that. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of different things that we can do to help people plan.
Well, that's generally what I say to people. Like, you know, 99.9% of the time, there's something that we can do, you know, even if it looks like all hope is lost. There's generally something we can do to help families at least have a choice. And that's why early planning is even better, because it gives you the most opportunities and the most, you know, the widest availability of options. So.
Yeah, I mean, we do whatever we have to do to help people navigate through these things. And we've been doing this for a long time. When people go, how did you know that? I'm like, it's not my first rodeo. What can I say? So
right.
We try to make sure there's lots of experience out there. And again, the webinars, they're free. You can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com. You can register there. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com, and Stacy can reach out to you and make sure that you're signed up. And it's low key. It's one of those things where you're going to the webinar, you pull it up on your computer, and you're muted, so we can't hear you. And you can, you know, go get a snack or whatever you want and just listen to it in the comfort of your home. It's kind of a great thing.
It is. I mean, you know, at first we were all kind of like, oh, this is so strange. And but I think we kind of got into a good rhythm with them, you know.
I
won't say it's natural, but it's better than no contact at all, you know.
It is. And it's good that people get an education at home for free. And kind of going back to the what to do when a loved one dies, after I did that one almost a month ago, I got all kinds of emails and phone calls and questions. And I even got a call yesterday from a friend of a friend, right, that had seen the presentation, and they wanted to know, hey, you know, they're going to sell the house. Is my husband entitled to any of the money? And we kind of went through the whole scenario, and I'm like, do they have a surviving spouse? Yes. Was it deeded to them when they were married? Yes. Well, guess what? The surviving spouse is going to get the money from the house. So, you know, it's one of those things where we've got to know all the situations before we can kind of tell you what's going to go on.
Right. Right. So, right. And it's, again, you know, it's great to have that information.
And we're done for the day. You guys have a great weekend. Don't forget webinar Wednesday this week, and we'll talk to you next weekend. Take care.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.